Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. Today is Friday, February 28, 2025. This is the 116th edition of the podcast. It's a beautiful sunny day here in Nashville, and it's just about time to put out some of those cold weather vegetables, radishes, and spring salad greens. As we get started today, let me remind everyone listening that you can subscribe to the podcast at no charge to you on Apple Podcasts, and you will be sent a notice when new programs are posted. Also, we do have our very own email notice list, which you can join by giving us your email at the front of our website, markfraley.com. We will no longer be posting any messages on Twitter. We very much want to hear from you and keep in touch with you and to hear your comments and suggestions. Communications should be addressed to me personally at Fraylaw, F-R-A-L-A-W, at AOL.com. As we look across the landscape of Tennessee today and all of our 95 counties, we have small cities and big cities all striving to make their place a more livable place, a place where decent jobs and schools are available, and where there is something meaningful and fun to engage in after work. Successful communities in Tennessee have learned that one element which builds this sort of place is a strong Parks and Recreation Agency. Green spaces and diverse programs make a place a truly livable place. The state of Tennessee has long recognized the importance of local parks and recreation agencies, and has several programs which assist local governments in this regard. At the helm of the state government effort is our guest today, April Johnson. April serves as Assistant Director of Recreation Services for the Tennessee Department of Conservation and Environment. April was the 2021 recipient of the TRPA Fellow Award. Today we learn a little bit about April, how she came to have her current job, and we get her thoughts on the importance of local parks and recreation programs in Tennessee. We will get started right after this brief message.
Hi, this is Heather Lose, Editor-in-Chief of the Tennessee Conservationist Magazine. Every year, we publish 6 beautiful issues packed full of timely and informative stories about Tennessee culture, people, and places. You can stay informed about your world and all the great things happening in your Tennessee state parks. It's easy to subscribe. Just go to our website at tnconservationist.org. Thank you.
April Johnson, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Thank you, Mark. I really appreciate the invite and the opportunity.
Well, it's really terrific to have you. It's been some years since I first made a cold call to you, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and it was an awkward call because yep. you didn't know me from Matt Adam, and I was just thinking maybe that we just talked then, but we didn't talk. And since then, you've received the TRPA Fellow Award, and there's been all kinds of reasons why we should get together and talk. So thanks for making the time to talk.
I appreciate it. Yeah, it was a little unusual time because I hadn't met you yet. So, right. You know, it was like a year or so after that I met you and then understood more. And here we are.
Well, you know, I'm a hail fellow and I like to reach out and talk to people. And anyway, here we are. And so thrilled to talk with you. I remember getting to know you a little bit better when you were actually presented with the TRPA Fellow Award up in Clarksville. I guess that's been 2023 or maybe 22.
It might have been 20, Mark. It might have been that. I'd have to go back and think. I know it wasn't last year. It wasn't the year before. So, right. Yeah, maybe it was. It might have been 20.
It was just
accurate.
Yeah, we were just coming out of COVID. And, you know, some of the people at the meeting were wearing masks and some others were not.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
And so it was a great time for fellowship. I remember going out to dinner with a bunch of folks there including
That's
Gerald
true.
and Anne and some of the old stays around Parks and Recreation. So you are among a dozen or so of the recipients of the Parks of the Fellow Award in Tennessee that I have interviewed, and there's always a story, April, about how you got into Parks and Recreation and how you've proceeded through the stages of your career. You're still a young individual. You probably have many, many more years in your career. You're the assistant director of Recreation Services now at Environment and Conservation. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into Parks and Recreation, and take it from there.
Sure. Kind of start from the beginning, which I won't make it too extensive, but I grew up in Harlan County in southeastern Kentucky. So at the foot of Black Mountain, which is the highest point in Kentucky, in a small little town called Cumberland, mining community. Originally, Cumberland was more of the retail aspect of it, residential and things along that lines. But just a small community where I stepped out my door and all I saw was mountains in any direction, which of course means kind of the sun comes up late and goes down early,
Right,
as you hear
right.
in a song. But I was also about, I don't know, football's length away from a river,
Okay.
where I grew up. So I spent a lot of time, playing outside, playing in that river, which I always used to be told I don't need to get in the river for safety reasons. But as a kid, you tend to do things that you're not necessarily supposed to do. Outside, riding bikes, going to areas, on the river, doing some trails that probably really weren't trails, just out being a kid, growing up and stuff. And when I graduated high school, I went to Eastern Kentucky University. I always joke, I had my last advisor who said, "What was your major before recreation and parks administration?" And I kind of grinned and looked at her and I said, "Which time?" And she said, "Oh, that's funny. That explains it, because my transcript was, biology classes and chemistry classes and business classes and an interior design class." And I was just, running the gambit to try to figure out where I needed to be and what I needed to be doing. And I had a couple of friends who were in the therapeutic recreation program.
Right.
So I started talking to them, meeting some people, going over to where the classes were. And it just felt better. It just felt better. So I decided to change my major to recreation and park administration, and started down the path.
Right.
So, classes and having fun with teachers. In biology, you don't necessarily get to have a good time with teachers, like going out and camping or hanging out with the grad assistants. One of the things that our group did is we were in the classes were in what was called the Begley Building, which was the stadium for the football.
Right,
It was a football
right.
stadium, so everything was in the bleachers. The it was built to where,
Underneath the bleachers,
you had all your
right,
classes there,
right.
which meant you had ramps that weren't ADA compliant, and we would get on those little scooters, that kids sit on and you hold on to the sides that stack, and we would have races up and down those ramps. So, recreation, it's
That's
fun.
old school, that's for
Old
sure.
school, try not to break anything and make sure you get that, when you turn that 90, 180 degrees, I guess, just right. So, but it just felt better. Felt like home. Got to do things that I've been doing when I was growing up. Got to go places that I went growing up. And then I graduated and kind of fell into my first position as a program coordinator. And then,
Now,
well,
where was that?
actually my first position was the summer youth coordinator at Loudoun United Methodist Church.
Okay, a church
So,
recreation.
yep.
Absolutely.
So I did that, and then I fell into the one I was describing. I got a call from Tellico Village, which is a private community on Tellico Lake, and they had an opening for a recreation programmer for the community center, and they had reached out and got resumes from other agencies and, asked if I was interested. And summer was nearly finishing up, so the church program was finishing up and I needed a job, and of course I was interested. So I did that for, I don't even think I was there a year. And then Knox County Parks advertised for a senior center coordinator. And so I got to work with Doug Battelle
Oh,
as
yeah.
the parks director at the time. Great impact, great influence, fabulous mentor. I'm going to ask you, do you hear that background
I
audio?
do.
Do you want me to? I can go in my house. It's a landscaping company, and
Let's.
they're blowing past my backyard. So,
Yeah, let's take a brief time out. If is it easy for you to move?
yeah, I can
Okay.
do that. Sorry.
I'll just pause for a moment. Oh, that's a nice quiet spot.
That better?
Oh, much more better, as they say.
Sorry about
So
that.
you were telling us about your experience with Knox County Parks and Recreation and getting to know Doug Battelle a little bit.
Yeah, so I was hired as the senior center coordinator for their first senior center in the county, and Doug was the director of parks. So I reported to their, or it might have been program manager, might have been her title. But that is where I met Doug, and that is
Right.
what started my involvement with Tennessee Recreation and Parks Association,
Right.
because Doug was a big proponent and always about education and supporting TRPA and getting out there, and had been a past president at that point. So it was, or maybe was his in presidential status at that point.
Right.
But he was great to work with. I didn't get to work extensively with him because the senior center I ran was on the west end of the county. But just the aspect that he was like, oh yeah, you definitely, we've got your membership, we want to make sure you're at conference, go to all the educational opportunities you can. He was just, real supportive of that, and, very impactful to me in, a young career aspect. So, and then what did I do? Oh, then I started, I left Knox County to work for the city of Clinton as their first ever. I've got these real good first evers. So it's like, oh, we don't know what we're going to hire, and somehow I end up in a position. Now those positions still exist today, but Clinton was their first program coordinator.
Okay.
So I worked under Roger Houck, who's now the city manager in Clinton.
Okay.
He was the parks director at the time, and really wasn't there very long either. And then the position for parks director at the city of Kingston opened
Right.
up. So I was with Clinton about a year and a half.
Right.
So then I got the opportunity to step in as a director position pretty early on in my career. I was trying to think.
Were you the first director in Kingston?
I was not. No,
No.
I think I was their third director.
Okay.
The two previous directors' names were Tony. So I
Oh,
was like,
gee.
oh,
Okay.
y'all would have been funny if I'd have been a TONI girl. But no, they
And were
had
they both local people that had been hired?
the one prior to me was
Right.
the previous one. I believe he came from New York.
Okay. Wow.
I'm not quite sure he was there for real long.
Right.
That's kind of a hard transition, New York to Kingston, Tennessee.
Have
But
to
he
tell
had
you,
done.
April, in about 1982 or 83, I had a night meeting in Kingston, which at the city council there, which will go down as one of the oddest experiences of my career. Because they did not have a director at the time.
Okay.
And, the department was, of course, encouraging people at cities and counties to engage
Yeah.
professional directors. And I think that's what they had me there at they had called me to come to the meeting. I got grilled by, and there appeared to be two factions on the city council at the time. One was sort of advocating for that, and others were against it. And But anyway, it was an odd experience, and I don't recall. And I left conservation and environment conservation in 87, and I don't think that they had made any moves during that time. So they always had this the old the fort there. Now I can't remember what it was called.
Fort Southwest Point.
Southwest Point, which was Revolutionary War era fort. At that time, it was an archaeological site. In other words, there was no visible evidence of a fort being there, other than maybe some mounds and places where the earth had actually been moved around it that you could see. But th there'd been no effort to reconstruct it as it finally had been happened. But so tell us about your experience. And I'm going to ask you this. I spent, 4 years working in local government in Sevierville and Gatlinburg, and coming from a big city. And it was an education to learn about how those little cities run. Tell us about your experience in Kingston, and just tell us a little bit about that.
It's different. I mean, it's way different from where I am now at the state. You know, at the time, it was a little bit different. Well, I'll say a lot different from where I had been, just because I had people above me
Right.
in Knox County and in Clinton, you know, reporting to the city manager and the county mayor, which Knox County was a county mayor at the time. It was whatever the title was prior to that. But you know, I wasn't on that leadership level.
Right.
So Kingston, I was on that leadership level, and a female. You know, there's always something to be said, you know, about that aspect
Right.
too.
Right.
So, you know, trying to go in, and the gentleman before me had been a local gentleman, so not, you know, a parks professional, not trained in parks and recreation, but we know, you know, you learn by doing.
Right.
But you know, when I got in there, it was like trying to assess what was there, figure out where things needed to be, want to be, just a whole lot. And you know, one of my I would say within the first 6 months, we had a pretty decent storm come through. So I had a very small team in Kingston. I had an assistant to the director, which was more of like an administrative assistant. And then I had seasonal lifeguards, and I had one full-time maintenance and a part-time that almost worked full-time some. I think I ended up being able to get him full-time. And then I had like the custodian, who was actually the custodian of all the buildings in the city, but he was on the parks department, and he had, you know, been employed for quite some time.
Right.
But we had trees go down. And you know, we get there, and it's like you got a little bit of an allowance, and if you want to go get a set of boots, if you think you'll be out in the field and need to get, you know, some steel toes or something along that lines, you can get some boots. And you know, I heard a few people was like, oh, she's gonna go buy steel toe boots, what's she gonna do? Well, about 6 months in, we had a bunch of trees down the park,
Right.
and I said, okay, where am I going? And my maintenance guy looked at me like I had three heads. He's like, what do you mean? And I'm like, where's the down tree that you need me to go clean up or cut up or, you know, move? And he was like, no, I thought you'd be in your office. And I'm like, we got work that needs to be done.
Right.
And so I mean, he was still floored, but out I went with him, you know, put on my boots, you know, grabbed a sweatshirt, did a couple of things along that lines, because in a small department, you do
Exactly.
everything,
Exactly.
whether it's, you know, unclogging a toilet or, you know, hanging trim, or in this particular instance, you know, cleaning up down trees.
Right.
And there was a couple other things, and then shortly after that, I heard him telling somebody, he's like, yeah, I thought, you know, I thought I was gonna have to kind of shield her and defend her, but no, I just get out of her way. She can take care of her own, she's gonna be fine. I just get out of her way.
So my
And
recollection is that Kingston had a small park along the lake there that had swing sets, and I guess that's where the pool was.
the pool was behind the community center, and the
Okay.
community center was essentially across the street, which was the
Okay.
dike.
I got it. I
So
got it.
across and down from Lakefront Park, which is what you're describing, and that's where
Right.
the tree was actually down at.
Right.
And then there
Right.
was a small park called Gravel Pit directly across from the community center that probably wasn't there in the 80s.
I don't remember that one. Yeah.
Yeah, they made a boat ramp and a little pavilion and a walking trail. So a
Right.
walking trail going from Birdfield was which was at the end of Lakefront Park, coming all the way through, going in front of Gravel Pit. Now I'm saying Lakefront Park. That may not be the right, I think that is the right name. I don't think it was City Park. And then going down, there was 58 Landing, which probably didn't exist, which was another boat launch and parking that continued along the trail that went to Southwest Point,
Right.
looped around the backside of Southwest Point up to the top, where they ended up being a baseball, soccer field, baseball, softball, soccer field, and a track.
Now that's
And then
new.
it kind of
I don't
looped
remember
again.
that those facilities. Now, were those developed while you were there or?
They had been there a while, so I think they were developed in the 90s.
Okay.
And
Okay.
then Southwest Point had the blockhouse and I think at least one other structure, as well as the Welcome Center when I was there. So there was construction there as well.
So were the were those was Southwest Point under your jurisdiction as director there or?
It was not. There
Okay.
was a fort director.
Okay.
There was discussion toward the time that I was leaving that it might be moved under parks, and the fort director and I had a good relationship, and we had,
Right.
figured out that if it happened, it'd be fine.
Right.
But it didn't happen to quite a while. Now you want a tidbit?
Sure.
That is now a state park.
Yes, I did hear that. I did hear that.
Yeah, there.
I was actually surprised by that. It's so interesting. And for folks that may not know what we're talking about an area on Fort Loudoun Lake.
What's bar?
Watts.
Oh, might actually be the Clinch. Might be the Clinch River right in front of there. There's three rivers that come together in Kingston. So that may be, I'd really have to get
It's
a
a lake.
map
It's
to
a let's
lay
just
on
say it's a lakefront property, at
waterfront.
the in and in Revolutionary War era times it would have been riverfront,
Yes.
but it was a fort area, and as I said earlier, in the 80s and 70s, it was just a piece of raw land. There was nothing there to see, and the archaeology people were interested in it. They thought it was a cool place, but they were adamant, the archaeology people were adamantly against the development of a reconstructed fort on that site. The city fathers and the people in county government there were always advocating, oh, we need to rebuild it. It would be a great tourist draw, et cetera, et cetera. So I was kind of surprised that it had been reconstructed, and then shocked, frankly, that the state wanted to take it over. But anyway, that's what happens.
Yeah, it is. They reconstructed on the actual footings. So they had, I think, the palisade wall up, in addition to, like I said, the two, if not three structures, and then had excavated another one beyond what was there when I was there, and
Right.
then had like a little welcome center. And they did educational opportunities with schools and stuff, and it was open on the weekend. And I got to fire a cannon, one of the few. I
Oh.
hadn't been there long, and as the new director, he's like, "Come on up, I want you to do something." So they packed it with flour. I think it was flour.
It
It might not have
should be
been.
interesting to see what state government does
Yeah.
with that, in terms of programming and are they. Do they have a state park ranger there,
They
or
will. There'll be a manager.
okay.
So, And I don't know, like, if they've started opening it, like, at this point as a state park. I mean,
Right.
it's acknowledged as, but they're I think I saw an advertisement very recently for the park manager.
Right. Well, let's
So,
jump ahead because we have
yep.
limited time today.
Of course.
And you ultimately got to began working for Tennessee state government
I
in the
did.
role as a park and recreation assistance, technical assistance provider. And what a great opportunity that presents for, to get out and see what's going on in all the little governments across the state. Tell us about getting into that and what your observations were when you first got started in that.
Sure. I left Kingston in 2006 and joined the it was Recreation Educational Services at the
Right,
time was the
right.
name, as a Parks and Recreation Technical Advisory Service consultant, PARTAS consultant.
Right.
So it was, East Tennessee. So I had, I think, 32 counties, I think was my breakdown. Most everything in the Eastern time zone, and I think maybe Cumberland County. And sometimes that map has changed depending on the location of the person. Again, something, new, with background, but new.
Right.
So, working with the local governments to, identify any issues that they may have or promote, partnerships and talking to each other or what items that they have that might qualify for grant assistance, doing some training locally, some strategic planning, some assessments, pulling up job descriptions for them when they were, looking for a position or trying to reevaluate. I mean, it was a variety of aspects.
Right.
What programs are done in other cities and counties across the state or across the eastern U.S. or even from, as far, as the western U.S. Is there something moving, migrating its way over as far as trending and in popularity? So it was, it kind of hit that part of me that doesn't always want to focus too long on one thing because, there was a lot of things up in the air and a lot of communities and a lot of details and remembering the specifications and then some additional training or keeping up training. So I was a certified parks and recreation professional, still am, continue that. And then in Kingston, I did it. I took the course and was certified as a certified playground safety inspector.
Got you. Yeah.
So that, of course, benefited the communities like in East Tennessee or really anywhere if they asked to, can you come out and look at our playground? Do we have any hazards here? Is there anything we need to fix?
Right.
Is something installed improperly? That, and then at one point I was aquatic facility operator while I was in Kingston because there was the outdoor pool. So having some aquatic background and it really took all the experiences that I'd had and rolled them kind of into one and then put them in the aspect of providing assistance
Right.
versus requesting funds to provide services.
Right. Many of the communities in my experience wanted to know how they compared to others and that were similarly situated. Were they spending enough money? Were they spending too much money? What about the fees that they charge for certain services versus, programs that are free of cost and that sort of thing. Are those some of the issues that you were presented with, maybe?
They still are. Now,
Yeah.
with the advancement of technology, they have an easier way to gather that information themselves without asking,
Right.
us. We do sometimes get asked. There used to be the Parks and Recreation Services Study, I think was the name of it, to where we would, ask a hopefully a bunch of communities would return this big long
Right,
questionnaire
about
about
every
what
2 years that was
conditions
done.
and
Right.
And so there, there's not as much of a need for that now because people are more connected through technology and sending a quick email or NRPA does some similar aspects that they, can benchmark against. But yeah, in the beginning, it was. There were still those requests and I inherited a multiple huge filing cabinets from Ann Marshall that had catalogs, playground
Oh,
catalogs,
really?
park
Oh,
supply
wow.
catalogs,
Wow.
you really don't need that now.
Right.
But at the time, we'd go to conferences and, grab 5-10 catalogs because if a community asked for something, we could take them. Where I'm looking for playgrounds, do you have any advice? Well, we would take them, 6 or 7 different playground manufacturers'
Right.
catalogs.
Right.
It's changed a lot in, well, September will be 19 years.
Wow.
But it, the core is still there. The providing assistance and helping gather data and making sure, that they're aware of things that they may not, or unique scenarios and things along that
Let me
lines.
ask you this, at the outset of the Parks and Recreation Technical Advisory Service, which was 79, there were one of the first things that I did was to kind of survey the 95 counties. And at the time, there were about 30 counties that had within them no park and recreation agency whatsoever, be it a county agency or a city agency. And there were a lot of departments that were like the county seat, and it was a department run by a city, but practically serving the entire county. I'm sure that happens still. And so the emphasis at in the early days was the creation of new agencies. Getting people to make the commitment to hire their first recreation director. Tell me where does that stand now? Are we pretty well covered in terms of, I know there's been a multitude of new agencies created in that time, but what does the landscape look like? Are there still areas where there really is nobody home? Or is that kind of a rare thing?
No, I'm sure there's still multiple counties without a, let's say, official
Right,
department.
right,
There might be a board, there might be volunteers, but
right.
not somebody officially, managing a budget or, assigning duties or keeping track of
Right,
stuff. I'd be hard pressed to guess
right.
and say that. How many are there? We do have the Tennessee Recreation Initiative Program. We do have a new cycle that has been announced, and there's an upcoming workshop that I'd have to reference to see what the date of that is because that's handled by our
Well,
grants
tell me
team.
what that program does.
Sure. So that assists the local government with establishing a parks and recreation department
Okay.
and a director.
Right.
So it is set up to where it is a $25,000 grant that is matched with a $25,000 local government funds
Right match,
the
right.
first 2 years, and then the third year of the program, 100% of the dollars to run it and complete the contract or the responsibility of the local government. The hope is it continues after those 3 years. That was established in the 90s,
Right.
so there's not a $25,000 plus 20, 50,000 total, then, was a little bit different than what it is now. So we're trying to work to revitalize that program. We've had some great success stories. We've had ones that just don't continue it after the 3 years. We've had ones that might have lost their director for going somewhere else in year two into three, and then they just don't rehire. So, I mean, it's a
Right.
variety of, ways things have come about, but we're hoping to spark interest again in the program and establish some new departments
Right.
and kind of move things or nudge them a little bit, forward to formality aspects.
You maybe looking at your experience in East Tennessee, knowing that you have statewide responsibilities now, but are there some candidates out there on the landscape that you have in the back of your mind as maybe would be candidates for that sort of thing?
And there's always a few you think about. There's ones that reach out for information. It's usually ones that, are in our distressed and at-risk county. So there's, reasons as to why it doesn't exist. And, and sometimes reasons why even after the program, the department doesn't continue. So you try to think of, is there, a city or a county or a joint project that would have enough, to stabilize it and move it beyond that. But then sometimes you got to look and also say, is there one that has enough money to even match it and add a new employee to their roster? There's still that aspect of economic level and what it may be and what it may mean. And, when you're in that distressed aspect, sometimes it's hard to think that, if we do this now, maybe in 4 or 5 years we'll get a return because it may bring in, tourism. If, there may be a program where it may establish a park and, people come and go to the park, they may eat or they may buy gas or, it's relying on them to be confident in their projection. And sometimes that's hard.
Mean, I can remember during the time that I was doing that program, the city of Crossville did not have a department. And I thought, wow, this is a town that's big enough to have one. It was not a distressed area by any measure. Certainly could afford to, and could not persuade them. Now, just a couple years later, they did finally get a department. There is. Two, the relationship between the services that state government provides with its own park system and what the local governments provide. And, while I was in state parks, there was a lobby, just to use this as an example, there was a lobby in Cumberland County, Crossville, to build a new swimming pool at Cumberland Mountain State Park. And I didn't think there was a need for a new swimming pool at Cumberland Mountain State Park. But the local legislator there thought better. And so she got funded a new swimming pool at Cumberland Mountain. And if there was a need for a pool there, it was for locals. And it was a pool that should have been developed by the local government, not state government, in my view. There's always that sort of give and take or tug of war going on between state and local government and who's going to fund what. But if state government's going to come in and build a major facility like that and spend several hundred thousand dollars on it, the city's never going to take the initiative to have their own department if the state's going to basically do it for them. So, is that sort of tug of war still going on around the state?
I'm sure it is, with the changes in the state and the state parks and, trying to make sure the focus is correct, for each of those parks, whether it's a state park that's a natural area, or whether it's a state park that has an historic aspect to it, or, a state park that has, some unique aspect, the falls at Fall Creek or protection of a view shed. There's always, who can do what, and if one does it, the other should or shouldn't. I mean, there's always dynamics going, here and there, and generally all over the place. What I'm kind of seeing now, this is not directed on like if there's something already there that the state decides to lo no longer operate. It's talking more along the let's get together, let's look at, what you provide versus what we provide. COVID really made people focus a lot more on outdoor recreation.
Well, that's an interesting observation. Tell us more.
Well, when the lockdown was locking people down, you could go outside. That was where it was safe to go. Our state parks were hit tremendously with masses of people coming to the state parks,
Right.
because that's somewhere that my dog's jumping up. She's saying hi.
Ah, look at that pretty thing.
Look over here.
Is this a standard poodle that we're looking
She
at?
is
Oh, beautiful
a
dog.
standard poodle. Get down. But there was that aspect of outside was safe. You still had to keep a distance, and well, we're better to keep a distance than in a state park that has hundreds and plus acres, and a natural aspect that people hadn't seen. And then you've got social media, I'm at the falls, and then people come. So it's, outdoor recreation took a little bit of a different focus because it was safe, but
Right.
it also let people know how much they enjoy it
Right.
and the benefits that it has. So it's still shown an increase in our recreation assets. I think Tennessee, I don't think, is unique in this. I'm only speaking Tennessee because that's where I am, and that's, where I work.
Right.
But, parks had an increase in attendance and people coming, and maybe it was just to walk, or maybe it was to climb, or maybe it was to bike or wade in the river or swim in the falls, or numerous
And
aspects
those
to it.
outdoor facilities that were in the local government sphere were all had a lot of pressure also.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Outdoor recreation in general,
Right.
not just state park assets, but recreation
Right.
assets in general, because you can be outside. It's safe. Go outside. And people did. And it was great. I think it, created an increased focus on recreation across the board. But it also, increased population. And if you have limited staff, and, I think we're still seeing the fact that we learned a whole lot during that time, whether it was on protocols, or whether that was spacing, or whether that was parking, or whether that was designating areas or additional staff to handle things. But
Doing
in
programs virtually.
doing a lot of things
Right,
virtually, yes,
right,
sir.
right.
And then technology, technology's advanced tremendously too. So I mean, it's just, working all that together. But people, I think, in general, as one of those blanket statements that I always am hesitant to use, people saw the value of recreation assets.
So what is the really hot thing, if you can
No.
put your name, put a tag on it, that's
Sir?
happening in local government parks and recreation in Tennessee today?
Pickleball.
Okay.
I mean,
Okay.
it's pickleball. If 10 years plus back, it was lacrosse. Prior to that, it was soccer. But right now, it's pickleball, and our local governments are, we're quick to be able to transform, sometimes some unused tennis facilities into pickleball courts or an additional set of lines. But I mean, now, we're seeing standalone pickleball courts and complexes, and maybe some of the unexpected aspects associated with that, like sound, that people didn't expect.
And you're going to have to tell me what that means.
Well, if you live near a pickleball court, you
Oh,
probably understand,
okay.
but
That
it's
sound. I was
that sound.
imagining that you were
No,
playing pickleball to the Grateful Dead or something, but
oh, wouldn't
no.
that be, that'd be kind of cool.
Okay.
No, just the sound of the balls on the
I got
rackets and
it.
the balls on the court, and people sound too, but pickleball's a little louder than tennis. And
Sure,
so
sure.
now there's some of the aspects associated with, you build a complex or you convert a bunch, and they might be near residents, and that's
And
a
under the
pretty,
lights, yeah. So they're
yeah.
playing t until 10 or 11 at night, yeah,
Yep.
making a lot of racket.
Yeah.
It occurs to me to ask about fees and charges in parks and recreation. People are more accepting than ever of having to pay a nominal fee to participate in programs like that.
Most often, I mean, sometimes you hear, well, I pay taxes, why do I need to pay for this? And that's, A lot of our smaller communities, I'm sure, are still getting that aspect. But I think people also appreciate the value of what they're receiving, and then they understand that the cost associated with it. There's also the aspect of, well, if it's free, does that mean it's not worth anything? So sometimes you won't get registrations for something that you offer for free because it's like, well, if they're willing to give it away for free, is it really worth anything? So it's always a fine dynamic trying to figure out the sweet spot for programming and events and maybe even a organization that'll do sponsorships for those that can't maybe afford a league of sorts.
So you look, if you look at the typical budget of a local park and recreation agency, one part of the budget is revenue sources, and you get revenue from the general fund of the city, but you also get revenue from fees, charges, what people pay at the door or for services. If you're running a golf course, you would hope that those numbers would come pretty close to matching one another so that they cover the cost. So in the typical local government budget, what percentage of that budget is recovered with fees and charges? Or is there really a great variation in that?
I think it varies significantly on the community, and I think it when you it's hard to look at it that way. I mean, there's people who do, and a lot of people who control a local budget do, but there's probably very few, if any, that completely break even. We may have a few in the state that do or come really close, or do on certain aspects or certain facilities. But if you step back and view it as an investment, it makes a little more sense. Now, that's a little bit harder of a mindset to come to because you think in and out, what am I spending versus what's coming in? But a lot of the aspects associated with recreation aren't visible in a line item in a budget. Whether it's the health and well-being of your citizens, whether it's the tourism aspect, whether it's the fact that they came to play ball or do whatever, like we talked about earlier, and bought gas or went to a local restaurant, whether it's the fact that your recreation opportunities look really nice to a company who's thinking about relocating. Are their employees going to be happy? Are they going to have somewhere to relax? Are they going to have somewhere to recreate? So recreation is a lot more than an out and in. What did I budget? What did I spend versus what I brought in? If you look at it in an investment aspect, and we had a presentation at TRPA by an A&E firm that kind of touched on this. Well, they went pretty in depth. I won't say touched, but it was a little bit of an eye opener and a new approach. So it, made some of our directors think a little about it and might see it, but they kind of based it on like an investment portfolio. You don't, when you're looking at your portfolio and you put money in, you don't immediately think that money's coming right back or you're going to double, triple, or earn anything off of it. And if you approach recreation in that way, we may be spending out money to build this or to renovate this. We're not going to see that money return the first year, maybe not even year 10, but we're going to see increase in citizen satisfaction, a better health impact. We may have more businesses come. We may have people, stop and eat and spend money. I like to, our commissioner of tourism has coined, tourism money's real money. He says that in almost all of his presentations. Well, recreation money is real money too. It might not be immediate. You probably are never going to have a direct offset. There's a lot of services local governments provide that they don't have a direct offset that covers. Recreation is one of those items too. It's a quality of life aspect. It's not a money maker. It's not private recreation, but it has tremendous impacts to things that aren't necessarily dollars that are deposited into one specific line item that you can see.
April, I couldn't have put it better. That really sums up why local governments do parks and recreation and the real value of it. So as you look at in the future, we just have a few more minutes. What does the future hold for local parks and recreation in Tennessee? Well, let me just ask it this way. What are the goals that that environment and conservation has for local government parks and recreation?
I think one of our goals is communities working together. You know, it used to be my backyard, these are my colors, you know, the colors of the school, and you know, and the parks were all those colors. And oh well, you know, I don't doesn't bother me that they're doing baseball because I want to do baseball myself. So what we're hoping and what we're seeing is communities working better together and maybe not duplicating, but maybe using each other as assets, maybe referring to each other, you know, taking a focus that's higher than just their boundaries, you know, maybe countywide, maybe region-wide, maybe statewide, and getting the right players in the game to maybe help offset costs associated with services. You know, we have some great organizations in the state of Tennessee that can, you know, help with maintenance design, help with cost, help with funding of particular recreation aspects, and draw those communities together with an overall goal. For us in the Office of Outdoor Recreation, we're kind of taking that approach. Our recreation consultants, so you talked about the name change.
Right.
So we went from Partask Consultants because we almost had to explain that every time we said it to someone who wasn't really familiar with us.
Right.
To recreation consultants. And our goal is to, you know, help our communities see that they're outdoor recreation providers, whether it's a trail, whether it's a bike path, you know, they are, most of them in the state, I won't say all because we've not done the statistics, have some form of outdoor recreation that they're already providing. Is that a way, there a way to work with your neighbor, whether it's a city or county that you're sharing with, and get a through path for a trail or a
Right.
bike trail
Right.
and promote it more than just on the local level. You
Right.
know, a few miles for a biker on a bike trail is not really that much. Not really that much, you know, for some walkers, even tremendous for some walkers as well. But if you could make a countywide connection and then a region-wide connection, you know, the Cumberland Trail, some of these other trails that we've got going in the state to where you can traverse, whether it's hiking, biking, boating, you know, our blue ways, just seeing things from a little bit of a bigger picture and what outdoor recreation opportunities can provide combined with each other and combined with their local communities, you know, to benefit us all. I mean,
You know,
that's where we're hoping things go.
we have a couple agencies in state in our state, Blount County, Maryville, Alcoa is a consolidated park and recreation agency. Those cities are not consolidated, and they're not a metropolitan government or anything like that. But for the purposes of parks and recreation, they've decided better to have one than have three. And so that's the kind of thing that can happen. There's also an opportunity for regional park authorities out there, you know, where you have an idea that's bigger than any one community can pull off on their own. You know, like a Bays Mountain Park or something like that. But there's so much opportunity for cooperation within local governments. I can tell you. I remember I'll leave you with this story. I remember traveling to McNairy County in you know it's 82 or 83, and my recollection was there is at least 10 municipalities in McNairy County, and
Maybe.
you know little towns like Finger. You know, and you know that there may be 200 people in this, or maybe 1,000 people living in it. The total county population's like 40,000 people, and there's like 10 municipalities, none of which on their own could ever afford to have a park and recreation agency. So if they're ever going to do it, they're going to have to do it cooperatively. So I hope, is that in the future, do you think, or is that happening now?
We're seeing, we're seeing a lot more like cities inside counties, starting to work together and cooperate. And that's our, that's our goal and hope, but it starts somewhere.
Right.
So it does it start with two cities and then it adds the county, and then we look, more at a multi-county. And it may not be a multifaceted single department, but at least working together,
Right.
to
Some
promote an
sort of
area.
agreement. Right. Right.
Because Tennessee, I mean, from one side to the other, there's a whole lot of different demographics. There's a whole lot of different topography. I mean, you've got, from the little micro rain climate up around, Rome Mountain State Park, all the way out to the Mississippi and the Delta down around Memphis. So I mean, it's, and in between you got mountains and you got plateaus and you got valleys, and
Right.
it's, we
It
got a little
presents
bit of
challenges, doesn't it?
everything. We
Yep.
got a little bit of everything. Present opportunities.
Right,
There's
right.
always a challenge to have an opportunity, but the opportunity's there. It's making sure the right players are there, connected in investment, and that's where we kind of come in to say, hey, have you talked to this person or have you thought about this, and try to make those connections
So,
and
April, as
make
we
the
wind up, where can the listener find you and your counterparts on the web or social media or whatever so that they can get a hold of you?
So social media, not so much. Tennessee State Parks has Facebook, I think, and Instagram and
Right.
stuff. Our Office of Outdoor Recreation, we do have a web page. Let me see if I can get that real quick because my browser is not wanting to open. But they can also email me if they'd like to. I'm april.johnson@tn.gov.
Gotcha.
And then the web page is in my signature on my email. Wait, that
Okay.
might be a good place for me to look as well. It is not in his.
If they Googled Office of Recreation,
Yes.
Outdoor Recreation, they
Yes.
would certainly find it for Tennessee.
Yep.
Well, excellent. Well, April, thank you so much for spending this hour with me, and talking about parks and recreation and local governments in Tennessee. It's been an honor to talk with you. Congratulations to you, 2 or 3 years late, for your award as a fellow.
Thank you.
And it's always a joy to see you when we do get together. And I wish you the best as the future unfolds for you.
Thank you, Mark. I really appreciate the opportunity and thank you for a fabulous time.
All right, hold on.